It's not easy to always persevere, but we were forced to go, we're going to persevere. And then what does that look like? That has been one of the sweetest journeys for our family, is to learn it. We had to learn to be vulnerable with each other and like really good truth telling, so that then we could come back to choose perseverance.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hey, 18 Summers community. Jim and Jamie back with Chris and Julie Bennett. Thanks for being here today, guys.
Thank you so much. We're so honored.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
We were excited when you reached out wanting to have a conversation, because I think our values align so closely, and I'd love to just jump right in. I know you have a book that you've worked on, Fighting for Family. It comes out in what, 11 days?
March. I know. Is it 11 days?
No, eight days.
Here it is. Just happened to have
a good looking book.
Getting real.
That little fam on the back. So, yeah.
So fun. Now, what is the book about, or what brought you to want to write the book?
Yeah.
I mean, the way we say it is, this book kind of found us. We found ourselves in a story that we never thought we were going to be in. We're from Texas and Oklahoma. I've been married 23 years, have four kids, and 2018 just felt led to kind of uproot and leave everything and move to LA, because that's what everyone from Oklahoma wants to do. Literally, guys, landed in LA with our four kids with no home and no job and no income, but just a real sense of we're supposed to be there and we got to get our feet on the ground. And met a family that was kind of empty nesters that invited us in. And we thought we were going to be there 2 weeks. We were trying to sell our house in Oklahoma, and we're going to use the sell of that money to kind of get us settled. And then the contract in the house fell through. So those 2 weeks with this family turned into 9 weeks. Yeah. And the week before we set a move out date, we didn't want to overstay our welcome. Julie got some really crazy news.
Yeah. So we had sold the house. We're like, we sold the house quick. We're coming. We'll just wait for a couple of weeks, and thought we were going into a season of rest. Sometimes we can all find ourselves in those. Okay, we're taking this risk. It seems pretty crazy. Sometimes wisdom and foolishness and following God, and what does it look like? We're always trying to navigate those things. And so we found ourselves in a story where we were navigating what we really thought the Lord was calling us to do, but it didn't always feel like wisdom, but we were trying to move without fear. And so house contract falls through, as he says. So our 2 week stay turned into,
Two months.
And I had a troubling spot under my arm before we left. I couldn't get into the doctor. It was kind of a wild situation. I thought, I'm just going to do it when I get there. We're literally moving in a week. And I found out I had stage 3 breast cancer. Wow. And then the house fell through. So now I've got 8 suitcases and 4 kids and my stuff stored in Texas somewhere until we find a place. And we had a decision to make. So again, it was a decision of like, now everybody that thought we were crazy, now things were really crazy. If we don't come home. Now you still own your home. Now there's these things. That's a longer story, but we were up against this decision of like, did we miss this? What are we doing? And I knew that I found out cancer in LA because that's where we were supposed to be and walk out the story that had been written for us, but that we were discovering along the way. So that's what we did. We ended up moving 20 times in 6.5 months while I did chemo with our 4 kids.
We don't recommend it.
We don't recommend it. But it has shaped us in ways that we never dreamed. And so we're thankful that we said yes, but never want to do it again. So,
and to answer your question, the way the book came about,
we were creating
media content out here, and we had filmed a trailer for a docuseries called Finding Family that we still plan on developing the next year or so. But it was kind of the journey of our family entering to the story of people or groups that didn't have family and showing the beauty and power of it. So that trailer, it got shopped around, ended up getting sent to a book publisher, Harper Horizon, who our book is with. And then they actually came to us. She was in remission at the time.
I had just been diagnosed.
Or just came back.
Sorry, my cancer came back when COVID.
Wow.
So I was in remission for a year.
It was COVID, cancer, and then a book literally came to us. And we felt, I don't know if there's ever a right time, but this felt like the right time. So then we spent a couple of years writing it.
That's amazing. And now, why LA?
That's a very interesting move.
Why LA? Well, I had an opportunity in 2018 for my son, who is now about to be 20 years old. He was 14 and a half at the time. And he's a brilliant artist and was invited to this art school in Pasadena, California that summer. And you had to be 18 years or older. Well, they gave him a full scholarship. He came, but he needed a guardian. So I was like, I'll go. Thanks. And so I came, and it was just, again, one of the weaving together of all the little pieces that make our stories, where I said, there's something here for us, but it's LA. I mean, who wants to live in LA? And I mean, Pasadena is really pretty. And then just, it was one thing after the other. Again, guys, we could take an hour and tell you God confirming in ways that we've seen God come through a lot, that God was doing something in our family and with us. And we saw him confirm things and just draw us quickly to something new. And I think in just ways we had never seen before, but God knew we needed that or we would have never have come. So within 2.5 months, we had told the church that we had pastored for 10 years, a decade in Oklahoma, that we never thought we would leave, that it was time for us to go. There's a lot of factors to that, but yeah, we found ourselves in September. So, LA.
I love the saying God winks. I don't know if you guys have ever read that book. It's a great book.
Oh, it's a good book.
So do you have any examples of a few of the God winks that happened to make that kind of move or happened along the way that pointed you in the right direction, whether for your treatment, for the settling house? Was there any God winks that really stick out? Those are always pretty interesting.
Yeah. It's a good question.
I've got one that jumps out. Now, after we had, I mean, there were multiple things before we moved, but I can tell you that when we moved here, and we were felt like everything feels against us in the natural. But I remember one day in particular, our 2 weeks with this family, like I said, it turned into 9 weeks. It had been really, really gracious. We had set a move out date of November the 9th. She got diagnosed the first week of November, essentially right around that time. But I remember the morning we were moving out of this family's home and we didn't know where we were going to stay that night. I remember her mom was flying in and we were like, what are we doing? And basically I got a text that morning. I was praying right before, when
this
I got out.
When we were already in LA.
In LA. But we had no money, nowhere to stay that night. I was reading this passage in the Bible that morning and I just was praying. I said, God, I need confirmation that we're supposed to be here. And I get a text from somebody a few minutes later that lives out of state that basically reached out and said, hey, can you get on a phone call? And they said, hey, we just heard about Julie, what she's gone through, and we want to pay for 6 months rent for you and your family. It came within like minutes of my prayer, literally. And so that is what actually enabled us kind of those first 6 months to kind of survive as we were trying to, I'm taking care of her, I'm taking care of my kids, and we're trying to create media and all this. That was one, is it?
Yeah, well, I mean, so you're kind of like, how did we even like decide on LA? I think that was your question. And I just was like, when I was with my son at this arts camp, just chilling, and we had come out of about 3 or 4 months of really, really hard. A different kind of hard than cancer. We all have different hard in our pilgrimage of life, right? It's like lots of journeys tied together to make that pilgrimage. And we were in a journey as a family that was really difficult before we moved. So I think part of that, we were positioned, never thinking we would leave Oklahoma. There was something out of the weariness before we even came that the Lord knew our hearts were positioned to be able to hear in a different way. And I started to have dreams. God would give me dreams while I was at the school with my son. And I just thought, this is weird. I'm probably just enjoying this. And so God took dreams and then someone praying for me was something that I'm like, they wouldn't have known that. That has to be God. And then Chris came out to visit our son during that 6 week school. He has a conversation with a producer that makes a comment. And there was just little threads along the way. Mm-hmm. And it's still like, never in a million years are we moving to LA. And then again, I think we could probably list about 10 really significant things. We had a friend call us when we were considering maybe there's something new that God is doing. She said, before I ever know this would ever have been an option for your family, she said, 3 months ago, I woke up and I had had a dream and the Lord in my dream said, I'm moving the Bennetts to LA to save Julie's life. And I looked at her and I said, what?
That's insane.
And she didn't tell us that was way before then. So it was just, there's lots of little moments where like, that's a really amazing confirmation because you wouldn't have known anything.
Yeah.
So
do you think you got better treatment for your cancer where you were than had you been back?
Yeah, that's a great question. I 100% do. And I think that was one of the biggest gifts of God. So a friend sharing a dream like that with me means a lot more. It wouldn't have meant anything if she told me then. I would have been like, that's a little weird. I'm not sure about that. But when you have things come around, like God just reminding you, like, I've got you, it may not make sense to other people and it may not even make sense to you. But God is so amazing to speak to us in different ways through people, through his words, maybe it's through a dream that meets us where we're at. And the ways that God confirms things for us to move was meeting us where we were at. And if, again, I said this, I wasn't supposed to go through treatment in Oklahoma. I needed to be here. So that's just a part of the story.
Yeah, that's huge. Now, one thing, because we do hard things, it's one thing that we have found ourselves in the middle of time and time again is hard things. And sometimes I think outsiders could say things like, wow, but where was God in this moment? Or, well, why would you continue to choose that? Or how do you see a sign when things look like poop and more poop on a rainy day? And I think that we've been walking through moments recently with our adopted daughter's family. And as it like breaks my heart and communicating with friends last week, and I was like, it's just really hard when I'm like, hey, use me for goodness.
Yeah.
Sit in my lap. But then somehow it like penetrates you so deeply. So I think that it's hard to find a gauge between like, I'm in a storm, but somehow I see other things. And Julie, you just sound like maybe you're really good at seeing things that are yet to come, you know? And so having that, I think for people of faith or even of non-faith to be able to know, to have a quiet moment of knowing that like, it's for a greater reason, whether we believe in it being God-driven. I don't know. That was just... Yeah.
Our word was perseverance, especially the second cancer battle. We did the t-shirts and the hats, and I was trying to get out to Spain for some special treatment in the middle of COVID. And
they all said perseverance on it.
And I just learned that perseverance isn't about an outcome. It's not letting the hard that's before you to be wasted, and it changes you. And for me, when I look at the hard, when I look at the decisions we've made, even when they didn't make sense to everybody else, and sometimes not to us, and sometimes like, this is a big risk to even say yes to stay. This is a big risk to do this to where I'm doing chemo. Like, am I even caring for myself? In the mystery of all of that, none of it was wasted. So I'm like, okay, so perseverance actually just developed something in us, but through our yes and through our risk, that has changed our life forever. So I wouldn't trade having cancer for anything, except I wish that never happened. How do those hold space? I don't know.
Yeah, all I know.
I'm not grateful I had cancer. When I was like, be grateful. I'm not grateful I had cancer, but yet I'm grateful for the journey because we would change through that. Like, we almost lost our marriage year two from lots of brokenness and affair. We've had major things happen in our life that it's the paradox of like, how can these hold space together? I don't know. It was really crappy and it was really hard and life is brutal, but the yes to stay in the story, we kind of say that a lot, has been the greatest gift for us. So,
and that word, I was just going to say the word and, I think is so appropriate when we talk about I had cancer and I chose to stay in the story and live a beautiful life. Like we're supposed to take a trip recently, got delayed. And we lived our core values. Like, it was kind of like it got delayed, but it's because it was greater things mattered. What were you going to say?
I was going to ask, I mean, you're talking about some pretty big, deep things that require a lot of perseverance. How was it for your four kids? Because it's one thing for us, something Jamie and I have learned to say, we're going to be persevering, but also we worked our way up. And it's when difficult times, I always say, man, how did the kids respond? How did they come through? How did they feel through this journey?
Hey there, friends. Let's talk about what really matters in life: money, freedom, and family. You know, the things that keep us going, but occasionally drive us crazy as well. Now, imagine if you could have all three at once. Crazy, right? To think that? But it's possible with mine and Jamie's passive income playbook. It's the perfect blueprint for creating a build-to-rent passive income generating real estate portfolio that gives you and your family the freedom and passive income that you deserve. Now, I'm not just talking about some small change here. We're talking about real tangible income that will allow you to never miss that family event, that ball game, or the vacation ever again. Now, I know what you're thinking. Oh, but investing in real estate is so hard and time consuming. But fear not, my friend. The Passive Income Playbook makes it easy and very straightforward, step by step. So why not visit jjplaybook.com today and schedule a conversation with one of our sales counselors and download your own copy. Trust me, it'll be the best investment you make this year. Besides, maybe you get that feeling that you're going to buy back your time and also create a legendary family life. Because let's be honest, what's better than financial freedom and quality family time? Not much, except maybe that peace of mind that comes when you know you'll never have to choose between work and family again. So go ahead, make the investment and prioritize what truly matters in life. Your family will thank you. One more time, go ahead and visit jjplaybook.com.
Yeah.
I think that I thought we were a really vulnerable family until all the shizzles, there's my nice word, hit the fan. And it was like, we're taking this big risk and like, we're going to live out our dreams. And it's like, we're ready to like adventure. And then like the world gives you no choice to be like, well, now we were going to be an adventurous family. And now the world gave me no choice to be a brave one. And how do you do that? And I thought we were really vulnerable until all of that. And you've got one kid who's so mad. You've got one who's like, I'm sleeping by your side for the rest of your life. I'm going to take care of you. You've got one that can't stop crying. And then you've got one that responds totally differently. And just really learning how to not put band-aids on things. I was really good at doing that, but I didn't think I was. And then you go through what we did and it's like, okay, we're going to persevere as a family. And then we have to discover, like we make these great statements. We're going to persevere and build character and then have hope. And it's like, okay, cool. Well, I'm just pissed right now at God. And I don't know if I believe this anymore. And we had to learn how to give space to just not be okay. And that sounds like a great idea too. It's not easy, just like it's not easy to always persevere, but we were forced to go, we're going to persevere. And then what does that look like? And so it was giving space for our kids to not be okay, to be undone, to not be like, oh, but it's going to be fine because everything will work out for good. Like that's not what they needed in that moment. They needed to just have the freedom without me fixing it with a comment, a statement, a Bible verse, or whatever it is, whatever we do, whatever our thing is. And it was more difficult for me probably than Chris, because we're really uniquely different as every marriage is. But that has been one of the sweetest journeys for our family, is to learn it, not just we did this. No, we had to learn to be vulnerable with each other and like really good truth telling so that then we could come back to choose perseverance. So that would be what I would say.
Great.
And you guys talked a lot about forgiveness. Like, what was the forgiveness journey for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, we write about it in the book. We've talked to our kids about our whole story, which has been really beautiful in and of itself. But even the idea of something that we call family, whether that's your family of origin, whether it's your chosen family, whether it's your workplace, it was supposed to be family. It's like everybody's got wounding around this thing called family. And I heard something recently how sociologists were saying, you know, family is the place we get wounded the most. But the irony of it all is the only place to get healed from your wounding of family is in the context of community of family. So what most people do is they get hurt, they pull away, they disconnect, they get isolated, and then loneliness, disconnection, all those things. Mm-hmm. So I think our journey has just been, I think every situation's unique, but we went through, like she said, some really hard stuff year three. And I think forgiveness is a choice that we have to make multiple times. And I think because of the pain we went through, forgiveness was I think forgiveness is as much for us as it is for the person that offended us. And I think we've seen, you know, we've been spent years in pastoral ministry, is if we sit around and wait for the person who hurt us to come to us, I think we're the ones that end up being in bondage, opposed to, I know that I need to experience the freedom on the inside. So I'm making a willful choice to forgive. And so we've walked through radical forgiveness in our marriage. We've walked through lots of forgiveness of different spiritual leadership stuff we've been through that was really painful and really hurtful. And I think it's just been like, she and I are so different. My tendency is I can move past things very quickly and get to the place of like, I'm going to say the right thing, do the right thing. But what I realize in reflection is I bypass my own pain and grief to get to the right place. Even though it was true and good, I didn't allow myself to feel the hurt and pain of wounding that was done to me. I mean, I sometimes would almost glaze over it. And Julie would be like, hey, that was kind of a big deal. You realize that, right? I'm like, oh no.
I'm like ready to fight and must.
She's ready to slash tires.
Let's go. And he's like, everything is awesome. I'm like, yeah, it's not awesome actually. So,
but I will say this, the only way we have the marriage we have is because we've chosen forgiveness again and again and again.
Yeah, it was just really easy, you know? Man, what is your... I think that's the thing too. Like, it was funny when you write a book, like almost 3 years ago, our book was delayed. There's all these things. And I was looking at the epilogue and I was like, oh yeah, that's a good point. Like, we're just learners, right? We're just constantly learning. And I think that's been a big thing, even in perseverance. And even like with walking with your kids, is like, guys, we have never arrived. And if we think we have, then we should stop and realize how much further we have to go. We celebrate where we're at. Whether that's in forgiveness, whether that's like, man, I'm seeing God differently now, or I'm seeing this person that doesn't believe like I do or think like I do. Like, how do I love them? Like, so multifaceted, right? And it's been like, again, with a book, like we're not coming as experts at families. We're coming as learners. We're learning. Right. Like I learned so much from my friends that work in foster care and do stuff. I've always had a desire to still want to foster. I'm not too old. I'm going to do it. I want kids, more kids. But whether it's like, there's things like the beginning of our book, where we're talking about our single friends. Like we were married at 21. I don't know what it's like to be single in your state, but we need to hear from you. We need to learn. How can we do community better, as from families of six to individuals? And my point is, perseverance, forgiveness, they're all integrated together in the heart of family and why we're created. And we're just, some of us are strong. If we sat down over dinner with you guys, we're going to go, they do this so well, and we've got to have that. But we don't do that very well. So we're going to learn. Like that's totally what keeps the table as the great equalizer.
Yeah. As you talk about community. And now I think you talk about finding your home base. Is that in relation to like this type of community?
Yeah, it's interesting because I mean, I think we make a distinction of one, we were all made for family, but I think so many people have found their closest knit family by their chosen family, not necessarily their family of origin. And I think all those things are so important. They impact who we are. But I think we try and talk about is these things get said a lot. Find where you belong, all those kind of buzzwords, but ultimately you're trying to find that place where there's like these key ingredients that make family really safe. And I think that's where, again, we say these things all the time, where you feel seen, you feel known. Mm-hmm. But I just think like there's a proverb that says family sticks together through all kinds of trouble. And I remember reading that as we were like bouncing around and sickness and all that and thought, man, if we didn't have our little tribe, I don't know what we'd do. And then I remember seeing COVID hit and you have so many people that didn't have that family, whether it was roommates or their own family, and depression, suicide skyrocketing. And I remember watching this video and it was like in Italy or something. Mm-hmm. And then these high rise apartments and the windows are open and they're singing back and forth the same song. And it's just like, oh man, life is hard. We don't get a pass on the hard. We get perseverance when we go through the hard, but we don't necessarily get a pass on the hard. But man, we can't go through it alone. We just can't. I don't think people can make it alone. And so that's where even we wrote this, it just said, family's hard, but it's worth it. And if we can write about our story and some of the barriers we've overcome to help people experience family, overcome those things, I think we're going to all be better for it.
Yeah, that's so true.
It's a big message there.
So often I always say that like our wound lies right next to our gift. And so I think that
I love that
like you wouldn't have chosen it. Like you're glad that you have this story and you can inspire others and it wasn't in vain. Maybe you wouldn't have gotten here the same way, but it gives purpose to the point, I guess. And now you're here. Going back to forgiveness for just a moment, you talk about the humility factor. Does your humility factor play into forgiveness, or talk that through with me?
Good question.
I want to tell a story.
Yeah.
Oh, how are we on time?
We're okay. Go ahead.
Just take about an hour and a half. So I was born at a really young age. No. So part of our story, again, this is in the book, is, you know, Jules had an affair going into year three of our marriage, and we were in ministry and we kind of had this, everybody thought, man, Chris and Julie, perfect marriage, all that. And there was just so much pain on the inside. But the day that I found out, I didn't have anybody to call, at least in my mind. I didn't have a mentor. I had no one to reach out to. And so I got my big old NIV 30-pound Bible that I'd had that she gave me in 1999. And I drove to a Starbucks, didn't know where to go, sat down at a table by myself. And I just prayed a little prayer. Like I just said, God, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to move forward. What do I do? And guys, it's never happened to me before in my life. Dropped my Bible down, didn't flip through it, didn't thumb through it. But I said that prayer and I looked down and it was open to the book of Hosea. The book of Hosea is basically this God telling this prophet to go marry this adulterous woman. And it's about his love for his people. Point is, my Bible is opened to Hosea 3 in the first verse, my eyes see. It said, the Lord said to me, take her and love her as I love her, although she's an adulterous woman and loved by another man. Underneath that scripture was her handwritten signature signed and dated from 3 years earlier.
Yeah. I don't really remember doing that.
Still trying to figure that out.
That's wild.
Wow.
It's wild. Yeah.
And so to your question of one was there was an invitation where I could choose right in that moment. I can be bitter and angry and justify it. I know the path that's going to take me down, or I can walk in forgiveness. And I feel like there was an invitation to do that. And so I'm not trying to sound the hero of the story. I'm saying I made a decision that day to forgive and then the next day and the next day. But I think humility, we talk a lot about is I used to think humility was like, oh, we're nobody. No, it's like humility is actually when we see ourselves rightly and we know actually who we are and we have a right perspective. And so I think humility is a willingness to get low and actually willing to forgive, and instead of being offended, say, no, I'm going to overlook offense. I don't think we can forgive without humility. I think it goes both ways though.
Yeah. Seeing yourself as you rightly are allows you to be able to forgive, because we know all of the things with forgiveness. Forgiveness isn't that boundaries. It doesn't mean that we're friends. It doesn't mean that we, well, not us, I'm sorry, but like we're friends. No, it doesn't mean all of those things always. But for me, we talk about this in the book also, but so much leading up to that. I mean, we were married at 21. What were we, 23 years old at this point? And I had sexual abuse in my background. So there were things that were feeding into it that I like, I didn't understand his forgiveness. I was like, you're crazy. Like, why would you be nice to him? Like, I actually had like a big issue with it. Like, be mad at me, fine. And just realizing so much because I didn't know how to look at Julie. He's like, I know who you are. I know why you married you. And you're amazing. And I'm like, no, I'm not actually. And if you're smart, you should run to the hills. Truly. I mean, just being vulnerable. Like, because I had no, the ingredient of humility where it's about seeing yourself rightly. I had no, I mean, I did and I didn't. So all of these things feeding into it. And again, we don't have time for the story, but in different contexts, I think we've all found ourselves in those places because shame is such a, it's a doozy on us, how we make choices, but they go together. And 20 years later, past that, it's not everybody's story. I understand that.
And we've had two couples in the last couple of weeks that have reached out to us that have our story because they knew our story. And so that's the mystery is, gosh, I wish it hadn't happened, but we wouldn't be who we are, have what we have, and be able to help people in the way that we've been able to.
Yeah.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Sure.
Yeah, you said something in the beginning of just core values, and I think we're hitting on some of those throughout this conversation, but I would love to hear for you guys, what are like one or two of your family core values that have like helped you guys create the family you have?
It's only a small list of them. We have them written on a little cartoon surfboard.
Yeah. And I wanted to stay on humility for just a moment and then I'll let you go. I love the way that you spun the idea of humility, of like knowing who you are. Cause I think sometimes like when we sit in that guilt and shame of our story or of something we experienced, we often don't have the humility to like, it's such an interesting spin on the word. I'm like really thinking on this, but to like show up and be, like, it took me a long time to become okay with my story. But once I did, I was like, man, I can really show up. I mean, I had the humility of knowing this isn't about me. You don't have to be shamed and guilted because this is not about you. This is for everybody that comes after you. So I just really,
that's a great way to say that too. It's really good. Thanks for saying that.
One of our
core values, yes.
Core values. We should have our
values activity. And we actually walk families through this. We've done this in workshops and stuff where we just, you start with like a 200 word list and you kind of go through and circle together what resonates for all of you. And then you kind of like go down and down and down until you get,
we call it our spaghetti strainer.
So all of our decisions.
But I'd say that's very interesting is adventure. That's a really fun one that we, I think, had we not put it on, I don't think there would have been that magnifying glass effect on it, but we've had some incredible adventures. Like just the, we made a decision to move to Costa Rica part-time a couple of years ago during the pandemic, similar to like your big move. And it's someplace we always loved. We got married there, but it was living up to that. And certain decisions we've made, even how we set up our businesses, will it take away from adventure? Another one that I think has been big for us is sobriety. That's one that we had on there where Jamie and I do enjoy a glass of wine, but my children have never seen me drunk ever. And we were around addiction, both sides of our family.
And we openly talk about
why we choose with our children. And it's just much more enjoyable. I'm not part of a local bar scene or anything like that, which I saw generations before me. And that's really important. So those are two.
And one that I would say that's really impacted us recently is service and contribution. Like that's huge for our family. And things that we've walked through, the way that I was like, oh, hey, use me. But then wait, hold on. You know, like I asked to be used, but now I'm terrified that I'm being used. And so our trip to Costa Rica has been delayed and delayed and delayed. And Jim is like you, Julie, probably like just like brutally honest in his emotions and like he can feel them right away. Whereas I'm more like, no, it's okay, but this is what we choose and whatever. But so Jim's been able to be honest enough to say, oh, I really wanted to be in Costa Rica right now. And I'm like, well, then go. Like, if you really want to go. And he's like, my values don't let me. Like, I know. He's like, I would be the biggest jerk on the planet. Like, I can't do it. And so, but it's because we are driven by our values and our value being, generosity, service and contribution, adventure. I mean, what we're sitting in with our family, even through service and contribution, is part of the adventure. And so I think so often.
And lifelong learning. That's another one. Like you said, being a learner, lifelong learner.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
It's humility. Yeah. It's humility.
So those are a few of them. So it's not perfect, but the one thing hopefully that encourages for anyone you work with or you guys or anyone listening, like literally we wrote it on a little, do we have
it in the office? Let me grab it. Nope. Sorry. I was like, grab it.
Where people are like, oh, you have to have this giant program written out in software. Oh, there it is. Yeah. We had to laminate it or it was going
to Well, then we had to draw some people on top of it because we thought we were done too. And then we did foster care and then private.
Oh, you did?
Yes. So we are very kindred spirits.
How many kids y'all have?
5.
18.
No. If I had my way, it would be 10.
Sometimes it feels like
dark. It's a good start.
I love it.
We have everybody else's. But what's interesting is one that we've added in recent years is balance. Like balance and integration because...
Well, we kind of changed balance and integration. Balance, we think, is kind of a myth now. So how do we get all these parts so they just kind of roll together?
Priority.
Yeah, we're now trying to.
I love that.
That's awesome.
Guys, it's so good.
We have a chalkboard. I'm going to show you over there, but ours has been there for a decade. Yeah. It's like our mission statement. It says we love Jesus. We're a joyful family. We love Jesus. We serve each other and we honor everyone. So it's kind of this mission statement that we live by. And then in our book, we talk about the Bennett's top priorities. It's be present with others, take risk, love others without judgment, do things that are fun, respect the boundaries of others. So, yeah.
It's amazing when you have just a little bit of that spaghetti strainer effect.
Yes.
How it can take you.
A compass. It can,
you're going to fall off the line. But how far you fall off the line, I think, is so much healthier because you have kind of that thing on your back. So it's
where you know when you have.
I mean, it's all getting tested now because we've got two. We have a 20-year-old who lives 30 minutes from us, has a full-time career. And then our second son, who we just sent off to college, he's playing college football at our alma mater, which is really cool.
Congrats.
So you're getting to see like parenting is the greenhouse effect where you sow into them, you pour into them over years, and then they get out of it and you say, okay, what's on the inside of them? To get to see that coming out of them, those values in their own life is really fun.
Wow. It is fun. And I sometimes am like, I say to him, I'm like, oh my gosh, the first two turned out. Like, we have three to go. Like, what do you think our chances are?
It's like, how are they going to do? This is amazing. How old is your oldest?
21 almost. So we go 2 to 20 right now. Yeah.
2 to 20. So we got quite the gamut right now. We go from meltdowns to adulthood.
Yeah. That's fun. Do you feel like when you think about your oldest to your youngest, are you like, wow, I'm being able to integrate things that I didn't know with my first? Like, do you see those pretty tangibly lived out? Like, wow, I know this.
Things that we figured out later, we're able to.
But not only are we integrating it, but the older ones with the 9-year-old and the 7-year-old, it's pretty special to watch that.
That's really cool.
That's a huge.
There's also no judgment, like an older child judgment. Like when I forget tooth fairy money with one of the younger ones and the older one's like, oh, way to go, mom. Do you need to borrow some money? Like, I just think there is no judgment, like older kid judgment.
But I think to sum it up, like you guys said, and it sounds like you have that, the biggest compliment, I guess, people have said to us, wow, your 18-year-old and your 20-year-old still like to hang out with you.
Yes.
That sounds like you guys have that same family.
I love that you just said that because it's the number one thing I think.
That's a very simple litmus test right there. Now, don't get me wrong. Maybe you get this, Chris. They've never laughed at one of my jokes. They don't like
it. No, I preach everybody. My kids are on the front row and they're going, oh, Dad.
He's super witty, but sometimes the kids are like one too many, you know.
Yeah. Well, our 9-year-old said, wait, people like pay to come to you? Watch you talk, and I was like, "Man, like she's like, why?
Why would they want to listen to you? That is amazing."
If anything can be said for everyone listening, I don't know a better litmus test than that, is saying, can you live in a place where they respect you and they just want to hang out?
Coming back for more.
And I'm sure you guys would say this from what it sounds like, the way you had to lead and go through hard things. It's not like you gave them everything. Not like you just
spoiled them or said yes every day.
Or you had each other against each other, where those really bad situations where the kid gets a lot of power because they're trying to gain love.
No.
So it's just, will they like you even though you did the hard things with them afterwards?
Right. That's right. It took me some great epic fails to learn this, but really just we're learning how to build trust over behavior modification and just really good behavior. So it looks like we're great. And that wasn't always easy because I would subconsciously like be controlling something or whatever, but just learning how to build trust and giving space to know that they are so safe, even when they epically fall. So
yeah. Give them that spot to fall back to is pretty
good. Yeah. So,
guys, where can people get the book, learn more about you, learn more about Fighting for Family?
And you have a social media presence? We didn't even talk about your welcome home lifestyle.
Yeah. Really, the best place right now is, well, my Instagram, JulieBennett_, and then I don't know what yours is. Yeah. What is yours?
Chris Bennett 143. But if you go to fightingforfamily.org, yes. Perfect. That's where you can order the book. And I mean, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, anywhere books are sold, March 12th, it'll be out. And then we have a bunch of events. We're doing a book tour in multiple cities. You're going to go to Tennessee and New York and Texas and Oklahoma. So people can jump in and join us for any of those.
Like my cute little family. If anything, you can just see my cute little family.
Yeah.
Great. And they're my family too.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be like, hey, you know, at my wedding, I was like, I was there.
I know. I'm like, your wedding was amazing.
Okay.
I know. Right. I need more therapy. I need help there. I don't know what my deal is. I keep saying that. Humility, maybe? No, I'm just kidding. So thank you, guys.
Well, it was so great chatting with you today. Thank you for being here.
You guys.
You guys are awesome. Thank you. Bless you.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.